Hello and welcome to the final episode of Trish Talk for the semester. My name is Patricia and welcome to Trish Talk. I have been a little bit MIA for the past 2 weeks. I was sick the first week and then just a family emergency last week. So that is all my bad. We will do a lot of catching up and a lot of well wishes because I'm quite unsure if I'm back next semester. Hopefully I am. But yeah, this has been super, super fun, and I hope everybody's had a really great 2 weeks when I've been away. I hope everybody enjoyed their Easter. I hope everybody's been enjoying the nicer weather we've had. I know this week it's been a little bit up and down, but it's okay. We're still enjoying it. But yeah, so I hope you enjoyed Saturn by SZA that was playing earlier. I did have a little jam out session to I Love It by Camila Cabello and Playboi Carti earlier. It's a beautiful song. I'm not even a fan of Camila like that, but it's a beautiful song. I'm sorry. I will tune back into Saturn just so I can finish getting prepped. I just wanted to do my greetings to y'all, and I hope y'all are well. So I will see you back in like 2 minutes, not even. There was a little bit more of Noah Kahan. I know if you guys have been tuning into my radio show earlier on, you know, I wasn't the biggest fan of him to start, but he's slowly been growing on me. A lot of artists that I originally weren't fans of have been growing on me. So, hey, man, I don't know. Always keep your minds open. But yes, so some of the topics for today's radio show, we are going to talk about the quiet onset. That was something I wanted to talk about. I believe it was last week. But again, I was family emergency. I wanted to talk about, you know, just do a little check-in to see how you guys were doing, some well wishes, and then just some final little farewell pieces before you guys may not see me until next semester. So to start, I know I said I had a Trish Talk Wulu account that has not been active since I started this radio show way back when. So if you are looking to see more of stuff that I do like this, even though it is not officially affiliated with my Trish Talk, I have a YouTube channel. You can most definitely go subscribe to my YouTube channel, Patricia Elizy, E-L-I-Z-Y, one word. Where I would do stuff like this. I do like commentaries, I do behind the scenes, I do challenges with my friends, day in the lives, like whatever. So check that out if you still want to see me over your summer and spring and summer semesters. If you're still in school or if you're just having an extra long summer, tune in. Okay, so to start, quiet onset. Now, I grew up loving Nickelodeon, okay? I'm pretty sure I wanted to get into acting because of Nickelodeon and Disney, and I was dead set on it. Like, I was bothering my mother every single day. Mom, I'm sorry that you had to deal with this, but I was bothering her almost, me and my brother were bothering her almost every single day, trying to get her to get us into acting and get us on the set of Nickelodeon or Disney, preferably Nickelodeon because we were fans of Victorious and iCarly and Sam and Cat, like those shows, ironically. But yeah, but honestly for me, I think it was Zoey 101 was one of my first shows that I was like, I want to get into acting because they were funny, and I thought I could have, honestly, I thought I was funnier than Logan, so that's another reason why I thought I could 110% be on that show and eat it up. What, five-year-old, six-year-old me? Insane. So, a little recap of what is Quiet Onset. Quiet Onset is an expose. One of the girls, I believe, let me find her name, I believe it's Nicole something, she played Yes, Alexis Nicholas. She played Nicole in Zoey 101. She, behind the scenes, I guess when Zoey 101 was filming, her and Jamie Lynn Spears had some ongoing feuds, and it was on the up and ups, apparently, from Alexis's mouth herself. She said that Britney Spears came on set one day and was pressing her for having beef and drama with Jamie Lynn Spears. She also did have an ongoing conflict with, what was that other girl's name? Kristen Herrera, also known as Dana. They also had ongoing feuds on set, so Alexis did end up leaving set. If you were a Zoey 101 fan, you'll know her character was swiftly exited. So she came out with an expose, or she had been honestly like the trailblazer, the kind of like starter of all of this. She had come out and spoke about her terrible experience on Nickelodeon. Obviously, we've known Jeanette McCurdy's been talking about her experience with Nickelodeon, but I feel like I'm honestly pretty sure Alexis has been speaking up about it a little bit sooner than Jeanette, but them two have been kind of the trailblazers to this whole thing starting. But yeah, Quiet Onset just discusses everybody's the child actors' experiences on set with Dan Schneider and Brian Perry, or Brian Peck, sorry. So yes, it's a lot. Sorry, I'm just trying to get some of the stuff ready, just so I'm not like typing back and forth. But yeah, so Quiet on Set was started by Alexis Nicole. Is not a producer. I don't even think she's tied to this in any way. But honestly, I feel like her trailblazing kind of led people to kind of, okay, let's investigate. But within the documentary, we heard from a mom of an actor. I cannot remember her name, but she was, or one of the child actors, but she was saying that, which I thought was very, very strange. She wanted to be a child actor when she was growing up. Her mom saw and knew how bad that would have been for her in terms of like just like the environment of being a child actor, and her mom had said no. So this mom was like, when her daughter wanted to do acting, her child didn't even like had mentioned it, I'm pretty sure, but she went all in for it. She put her in it. It was very much like, I'm living vicariously through you because I couldn't do it. You're gonna live out all of my dreams. And stuff happened. I think his name was Justin, one of the producers of the show, because at the time I believe it was That 90s or That Something Show. Guys, I'm sorry. My facts are not all straight. I'm so sorry. Should we take a break? We'll take a break and let me get all my stuff together, and then I'm going to come back because this is really bad. Sorry. One second. Okay. My bad. I'm back. Okay. I found the Wikipedia breakdown of it. So I did end up watching all three episodes. Four, I believe. Yeah. Sorry. All four episodes I ended up watching. So it's not like I'm just, you know, kind of not educated on it. It's just when I watched it, this was on the 18th when it came out. So it's been some time. So I'm just trying to get everything together. Sorry. Anyways. Okay. So the first episode was called Rising Stars and Rising Questions. The episode explores the early careers of Dan Schneider, especially with his involvement in the production and writers of All That, which is a show Amanda Bynes starred on. Two former female writers on the show, Christy Stratton and Jenny Killigan, discussed their tumultuous relationship with Dan Schneider. The backstory on that, they were the only two female writers on the whole entire set of All That, and I'm pretty sure, honestly, within all of Nickelodeon. And they were given the wage of one man, so all of the men in the writer's room, they were given the one wage and told to split it. So they had to split the one wage that one man would make with two women. I thought that was insane when I heard that. These include a split payment that goes against the rules of the Writers Guild of America and sexual harassment allegations from Schneider. And that is from Jenny Killigan. She went forward and said that Dan Schneider was being very, very violent sexually and verbally. The episode ends after a settled lawsuit on gender discrimination and the two writers get fired. So yeah, both of the writers end up getting, I don't think it's right about fired, because I know Jenny got fired in the episode. Jenny got fired, and then Christy stayed on for another season of All That. And then it was like, she said it was really hard to work because she was the only writer in the room. And then I'm pretty sure she quit. I don't think she was fired. So the second episode talks about hiding, is titled Hiding in Plain Sight. And that is Amanda Bynes was discovered by a producer in 1996 during a routine at Laugh's Factory. So that's how Amanda Bynes first got her big break into Hollywood. Her career was catapulted by The Amanda Show and What I Like About You. Former child actors of All That also speak out on Schneider's hard treatment of them, including Leon Friesen, Brian Hernan, Katrina Johnson, and Giovanni Samuels, and Kyle Sullivan. The episode also reveals two crew members of All That, production assistant Jason Handy and the dialogue coach Brian Peck, the latter which also worked on The Amanda Show, became convicted sex offenders. So Jason and Brian are two production assistants that were brought on were hired by Nickelodeon. But I think specifically Dan Schneider for Brian, but I'm pretty sure Jason was hired just by Nickelodeon. Brian was a dialogue coach and Jason was again the production assistant. And with Jason's whole spiel, Jason was again a production assistant, and he had ended up sending the mom's daughter. I think her name was Brandy. I'm pretty sure that was the girl's name, Brandy. It doesn't say here on the Wikipedia thing, but I'm almost certain from the episode, her name was, like, the mom said her name was Brandy. But Brandy was a child, and she had kept in close contact with Jason, and he had ended up, you know, private messaging her, sending her messages when she was away. And one of the emails, messages he had sent her, was him nude. And the mom, Brandy's mom, ended up finding out about it, but she doesn't go to the police. She said she didn't know what to do. She didn't want to, you know, step on anybody's toes or give her daughter a harder time on set. So you're still going to allow your daughter to return to set even after all of this? This is another thing I have a problem I have with child actors. Most times these child actors end up being the support system financially for their families. And it removes any type of like freedom or autonomy that they get with like their own choice. Like, because they know how dire it is, like, I'm the sole breadwinner for my family. You know, I've had my family move out all the way to California or wherever, you know, uproot their lives. Maybe my parents had to quit their job, take time off, whatever. I know how much they had to sacrifice for me. So like, I'm going to sacrifice basically almost anything to make sure that they have, you know, a roof over their head, food in their bellies, things they want to buy. If it means I have to sacrifice my own sanity, they gave up everything for me. And that's such a big burden to put on such a child, someone that's no more than 8, 9, sometimes even 6, a burden to put on a child. I do not think children should have to deal with such like responsibility at such young ages. But yes, that was about Jason. He had ended up sending pictures, naked pictures of himself to the minor, and it was later found out that, and then he got arrested and convicted for it. I don't believe, though, it was through Brandy. I think it was from someone else, because he, again, was in close contact with almost every single child because he was a production assistant. And then when it came to Brian Peck, he was a dialogue coach. He was brought on, I specifically remember this, he was brought on by Dan Schneider, hired to just be a dialogue coach. His character, he also then later transitioned into having a semi-recurring character in All That as Pickle Boy. If you were, you know, around or watching the All That show back then, the Amanda show. If you're watching the Amanda show back then, he was Pickle Boy, and he would have random scenes where he would just give out pickles. And honestly, it doesn't make any sense. Like, I don't really see the point. Like, it's funny, I guess, for kids, but like, if you look at like the sexual innuendos about it, like, it just doesn't, like, his character didn't really need to be needed. Or even at that, if you wanted him, like, you could have had like the guy from iCarly, what's his name? He just did the interview with Dan Schneider, whatever, the guy who has the bagels on the stick, can't remember his name. That makes sense. Having somebody's character like Tebow, where he just has bagels on a stick, and he was a funny recurring character, I feel like that kind of worked. Whereas Pickle Boy, it was kind of pushing the boundaries a little bit. But yes, Brian Peck had also, been a child offender, a sex offender, and one of his victims... one of his victims end up being Drake Bell, which is the next episode that we end up talking about, which is called The Darkest Secret. Drake Bell and his father, Joe, discuss how during the production of The Amanda Show, Brian Peck manipulated Drake into believing Peck was more important in Drake's life than his parents. Drake struggles to talk about Peck eventually sexually assaulting him many times. After Peck repeatedly tried to call Drake at his girlfriend's house and insisting he play the role of the father on Drake and Josh, he and his mom organized a police sting that resulted in Peck being arrested. Drake and his parents were relieved that they would not have to deal with him anymore, but Drake remained traumatized for years to the point where he went down a self-destructive path. Now, if you also know, Drake Bell has also himself been a child offender. Sorry, the window is open and you can hear these geese. Sorry. Sorry. But yes, Drake Bell himself was also a, I believe he was in a relationship at 30 with a 15-year-old. It was nuts. And again, we know that a lot of the times people who go through child sexual assault end up most times themselves being assaulters. And as hard as it is, I really wish Drake dealt with it on his own and, you know, really sat to deal with all those so he didn't further traumatize somebody else. But again, I'm just a reporter, babe. I'm just letting y'all know the news. Brian, sorry, I keep almost saying Josh because their last names are so same. They're so similar, like literally the same. But Brian ends up obviously being convicted and is a registered sex offender. The thing is, he later gets hired by Disney to work on The Suite Life of Zack and Cody. What? And mind you, this wasn't even like, oh, well, he got tried or he got charged after and da da da. No, like he was caught, convicted, whatever, or caught, convicted, and then put on the registry, and then Disney Disney themselves still hired Brian Peck to work on The Suite Life of Zack and Cody as what? A dialogue coach. Are you joking? Are you literally joking? Like, this is where protect the children, like, do children really matter in Hollywood? Are children really safe in Hollywood? This is where these questions and these movements and these things come into play, because if you are willing to put a child, a convicted sex offender, to work on a children's network, what else is up for grabs? Like, this is a convicted person. Like, this is not something where it's like, oh, it's a rumor, you know, this is just talk up within the Hollywood, like, network. No, like, this is literally, like, you were tried, convicted, they found you guilty, you were put on the registry, and you were still hired to work on another children's network show. Oh my goodness, I literally can't. The final and most recent episode, called Close to the Sun. The episode begins by discussing Brian Peck's court case, which involves multiple Hollywood individuals supporting him. Dan Schneider's later career saw him become more important to Nickelodeon, but receives scrutiny for his sometimes inappropriate behavior, as well as sexual jokes featured on Zoe 101, iCarly, and Victorious. And if you have seen any of those shows, you will know how honestly, like, at the age maybe we were at, like, if you were, like, 8 to, like, 12, you maybe wouldn't have picked it up, but, like, honestly, yeah, if you were, like, maybe 11, 12 or younger, you probably wouldn't have picked it up. But, like, to still see if you could push those boundaries, knowing that it's not only 12-year-olds and younger that are watching this, knowing that maybe they're watching this with their parents, their older siblings, their cousins, whatever, who may be older and picking up on these sexual innuendos. I just think that's insane. Like, you were willing to push the boundaries on all three TV shows that far. And, like, just nothing. No repercussions, nothing. Nickelodeon's decision to fire Schneider in 2018 in the wake of the Me Too movement was applauded by crew members. Some of the interviewees reflected on how being child actors affected their well-being, and the episode acknowledges Drake Bell's legal issues, including his DUI arrest in 2015 and his 2021 guilty plea for child endangerment, which we talked about, but I did not mention his DUI, but I just didn't think that was relevant to the fact of, like, yes, he struggled with the substance and whatever, but I feel like anybody, whether you went through child sexual assault or not, you really could have, you know, like, gotten into a DUI. But that was the most recent episode. The next episode is called Breaking the Silence, and that comes out on the 7th in 2 days. So I would say, honestly, if you guys had maybe some time and wanted to watch it, honestly, I would say watch it. It's very insightful and informative, and especially if you were someone who watched Nickelodeon growing up really, like, religiously or, like, heavy, like I did. Just, it sucks because it, like, breaks, like, this, like, these, like, rose-colored glasses you had. Because, like, honestly, before this, and even before a lot of, like, the speculation of, like, Dan Schneider, I was still loving iCarly. I was still loving Victorious. Like, I was still loving Sam and Cat. I would still go rewatch those shows. But it's, like, now I'm just, like, having to, like, hear about, like, everything that was going on behind the scenes, like, what they went through when they were young, and then having to transition to this, like, Jeanette McCurdy. It's just so, like, damn. Like, I can't even watch these shows anymore, knowing that, like, Dan Schneider's probably getting royalties on this. Like, and it sucks that these actors are also probably getting royalties, but it's like, I can't support Dan like that. Like, I'm sorry. The one thing I will say, though, which it didn't mention in this Wikipedia breakdown, Dan Schneider was very, very adamant on getting Brian Peck out of there. Once he found out what happened with Drake Bell, he was in support of him getting exiled from Nickelodeon. He was in support of him getting... Or, like, yeah, he was there for Drake. He wrote a letter on Drake's behalf saying how great Drake was and how he believes him and how it's literally make, like, anything Drake is saying is not a lie. Like, he's a genuine, honest boy. But yeah, that's a little cute little synopsis of each episode and a breakdown of what Quiet on Set is. Now, from the discourse online after the breakdown of all of these episodes, a lot of people are saying that the writers should have spoken up. The female writers in the room who knew what was going on should have spoken up. The other people, or, like, production assistants and whatever, who had their own speculations on what was going on set should have also spoken up to save those children. And yes, I 100% get that. I believe that these parents or these production agents should have said something. These writers, the female writers, should have said something. But this is the thing. They were also going through their own discrimination. They were going through their own harassment. They were going through their own verbal abuse. I'm so sorry, but just like on a plane, if the plane is going down, you are supposed to put your mask on first. I just don't think that we should have bestowed such a big responsibility on writers, on production assistants, on people whose only main job when coming into this work field was production and writing and directing and whatever. Like, these people were not meant to be, yes, they're supposed to supervise the kids because of, you know, you're on set, whatever, but it's like, the parents were, oh, this is my next point, the parents were supervising their kids the entire time they were on set. It was said in the documentary that the parents were not allowed to leave their children alone, or majority of the, basically all of the parents never left their kids alone. The parents had to be on set at all times. If you watch in the documentary, there will be a clip. I think it's in the second or third episode. There's a clip where you see all of the parents in like this, like their own little room. And they had to, the parents have to stay on set basically all day. Like not even basically all day, the parents have to stay on set. So if the parents are forced to stay on set to stay with their kids all day, why are we putting all of this weight on these writers saying that they should have spoken up and they should have, you know, called the police, whatever, did this, you know, did this with Brian, did this with Jason? I just don't think if the parents were present and active in these children's lives like Drake Bell's father was, he was one of the first people to clock, yo, Brian, you're being a little too close to my son and a little too weird with him. You need to back off. And Josh or Drake's dad was so adamant on this. He went to other writers and producers. He went to Dan Schneider himself. He mentioned it to Brian, like, hey, like, what is it with my son? Like, there were so many instances where he was pushing himself and enforcing himself, as a parent should, to be in his kid's life. And I think that is what we should be focusing on. The fact that these parents were not doing their job because they were, a lot of them were focused on a check and not on their children. That is what we should be getting upset about, because it is honestly nobody's responsibility to be watching over these kids, like, for in that sense, besides the parents. And especially if you parents are on set, if you parents are, you know, every single day on set the same amount of time your kid is on set, there should be absolutely no reason why, one, you're not looking out for your child, and why, two, the writers and other production assistants should be held to such a high regard, or be ridiculed to such a high regard for the responsibility of someone else's kids. I just think it's ridiculous. But yeah, that was basically it for the first segment of Quiet on Set. I just think, I don't know, I thought it was nuts. I think it's this whole, everything about this is just insane. I'm glad Nickelodeon finally got rid of Dan Schneider. I hate the fact that Tebow even gave him the time of day to even have a platform to speak up, to rebuttal what's going on. I think that is so stupid. Tebow, what is we doing? But that's where we're at right now. So hopefully you guys keep up, because I won't be back. But maybe I'll be back on my YouTube channel and I'll keep up with what's going on and keep giving my opinions, because I really am interested in this and I would like to see where this goes. Yeah, honestly, I would like to see where this goes with Nickelodeon and honestly Disney as well, because what do you mean you hired Brian Peck? Okay, we will do a quick little intermission break so I can get prepared for the next one, so we're not running into the same issues we had on this first segment. So I will be right back. Enjoy Like That by Future and Metro Boomin and Kendrick Lamar. Y'all can't tell me that single open verse, or that open bar, was not for Drake. Like, that was not Metro's diss at Drake. Like, oh, you could have really been on this, huh? LOL. Anyways, the next segment is me discussing the PPC party. Now, you're probably wondering, Patricia, what does this have to do with literally anything? And if you remember way back when I was giving y'all the little breakdown of what my podcast was going to be about, it's about everything, babe. I talk about just about anything that's trending and anything I deem as important. Now, why would I deem this as important? Because as you know, in 2026, we've got an election coming up. Now, everybody is tired of the conservative and the liberals. And if you're not, tired of the, I just lost my train of thought. If you're not tired of the conservative and the liberal party, maybe you just need to learn about, or maybe you don't know every party. You probably need to learn about a couple more. So the party that I'm going to discuss today is the PPC party. Now, I'm not going to go over every single thing about what the PPC party is and like what they're discussing, but I will just talk about a couple highlights and some of the things that I think separates them from like the liberals, conservative, and what makes them, I feel like, one of the best candidates in terms of aligning with Canadian values, you know? Okay, so the leader for the PPC party is Maxime Bernier. I literally do not know how to pronounce this man's last name, but I'm gonna call him Max. He looks very, very like French. I don't know. It's not even about the last name. Like, just, he looks French. I'm looking at his photo right now. If you don't know who that is, look him up. Anyways, so he is known as a dependable politician who speaks his mind, a man of ideas. His beliefs in personal responsibility and freedom is at the heart of his political vision. In his public statement, he expresses those values and his unwavering commitment to reducing the size of government. Wow. And I hope along with the size of government, you reduce the amount of money they're making. Because if you didn't know, Justin Trudeau just got a $17,000 pay increase. For what? Babe, we're wondering the same questions. We're literally asking the exact same questions. Now, why do I believe that they align with a little bit more of Canadian values and what Canadians are asking for from their government? Because please never forget, the government, the people in government are supposed to work for the citizens. Let me say this one more time. The people in government are supposed to work for the citizens. They are not just up there because we just like them being, you know, in a higher power than us. No, we the people voted them to be a collective voice for us. Just think about it as like a presentation, okay? Say the teacher's like, it's a group of four of y'all. The teacher's like, okay, I only need one of y'all to speak to discuss the presentation. You're going to nominate one person to represent the entirety of the group. If that one person starts to deviate from the script during that presentation and, you know, goes on their own little rampage, just starts to say and do things that are not reflecting the group, what are we going to do as the group? We're going to stop that presentation and be like, yo, this isn't what we was asking for. This isn't what we came prepared for. This is what we put the person, this is not what the presenter was originally supposed to present. This is not what we were asking for or what, you know, we represent. Let's trade out and let's have another person go up in the group. This is what government is. These people, if they're not accurately representing us, we kick them out. We let them go. Now, am I saying that, you know, we need to have these people in like as prime minister, like PPC should be prime minister? I don't know. I'm specifically speaking for Ontario. Maybe we just have PPC be our premiers and, you know, we kick out Doug Ford and maybe this Max guy becomes our premier. Who knows? Or even if he's not running for premier, whoever is running for premier of Ontario, maybe they become premier. I'm not saying that they got to be, you know, running the country, but maybe they should be running a couple provinces. But hey, I'm just here to report on why I think y'all should tap into what the PPC is. Okay, so the first one, self-defense. Now, y'all live in Canada. Y'all know. In Canada, you cannot defend yourself, basically. You can't own, if you're a woman, not a woman, but if you're a girl, you know, in some places in like the States and stuff, they'll walk around with pepper spray, you know, pocket knives or stuff like of that sorts. In Canada, you can't walk around with pepper spray. You will actually get charged, fined, probably arrested if you spray somebody with pepper spray. Bear mace, I think, is allowed. But I honestly, I'm not too sure. But again, you cannot have pepper spray in Canada. Now, after this is what the PPC says, this is the issue. After 8 years of the Trudeau government, Canada has become a dramatically more dangerous place. After declining for decades, crime is again on the rise and Canadians don't feel safe anymore, walking down the street at nights in many cities or even in their own homes. And if you see what's going on in Toronto, especially, like I'm only mentioning Toronto because that's the news I'd be hearing about, literally like that, I think a week ago, 2 weeks ago, the Toronto Police Service came out and was like, yeah, basically just leave your keys in the front of your house, just to make it easier for criminals to just take the car keys rather than searching through your whole house and potentially killing you. Huh? Well, obviously, yes, I know my life is worth more than a fucking car. Sorry for swearing. I know my life is worth more than a damn car. Huh? If I'm putting in $33,000 for this car, you best believe I'm fighting tooth and nail, okay, before a thief comes to walk freely up in my house to steal my car keys and walk out. No. So, one of the obvious ways to deter crime is to make it clear to criminals that there are laws and enforcements in place that make it more likely that they will be caught and severely punished. Another is the fear that their victims are going to defend themselves. Any justice system grounded in morality and reasons allows self-defense. In Canada, this right is, however, inconsistently applied due to the laws and the complexity. This is a fact. Section 34 of the Criminal Code states that in what circumstances individuals can use force to defend themselves or other force is or others if force is being used to threaten against them or others. Section 35 recognizes certain circumstances where an individual is justified in using physical force against another person to protect his or her property from being entered, taken, damaged, or destroyed. Okay, period. So, Victims of robbery are typically advised to call the police and avoid any confrontation with assailants while waiting for the police to arrive. In rural areas, however, police stations are often far away and can take a long time for the police to arrive at the crime scene. The threat that the victim may retaliate with force is a crucial way to deter crime. I agree. So, what is their plan? Canadians should be able to defend themselves in circumstances where they are violently attacked or victims of robbery in their own homes without fear of criminal charges. Everybody, and women in particular, should be allowed to carry effective means of self-defense against aggressors and rapists. The People's Party of Canada, the People's Party government will amend Section 34 of the Criminal Code to clarify and fortify the right to self-defense and increase the burden of proof necessary to charge and convict victims who used force to defend themselves against a violent attacker. I agree with this. So again, we'll go back to Section 34, states that in what circumstances individuals can use force to defend themselves. So there's only specific instances in which you can defend yourself and won't be charged. But the People's Party is saying they're going to clarify exactly what, and then also maybe even add and change around what the right to self-defense is, and then increase the burden of proof necessary to charge and convict these victims. So giving them heavier sentences, increasing the burden of proof necessary. So really honing in on, wait, what? Increasing the burden of the proof necessary to charge and convict victims who used force to defend themselves against. Oh, so basically like taking the burden off of like, if I shoot you because you came up into my house, I'm not going to get charged for that. Which, again, should be something. I don't know why in Canada it's like, if you shoot somebody who breaks into your house or is trying to steal from you, you could be charged for that. I think that's so crazy. They are also looking to amend the Section 35 of the Criminal Code to include the concept of the inviolability of one's home, known as the Castle Doctrine. That allows victims to use force, up to and including deadly force, to defend themselves against a violent intruder, free from legal prosecution. And then finally here, to amend the criminal code to remove pepper spray from the list of prohibited weapons to make it legal to possess and carry for self-defense. I think, as a woman who has on multiple instances at night been approached by men on a low-key kind of scary interaction, I would have loved to have some pepper spray. I walk with a pocket knife in my bag, but sometimes I'm not walking with that specific bag. So, and again, if I stab you, I'm probably going to get charged, just even worse if I were to pepper spray you. So, like, I don't know. I just think I agree with this. There should not be a repercussion on me for defending myself from somebody attacking me or stealing from me or trying to harm me. Another one of the People's Party of Canada's, I'm sorry, I have to burp. Another one of the People's Party of Canada's things that they would like to amend. So the issue is healthcare. We know this, especially in Ontario. Doug Ford, I hope one of these days I get to meet you. I really hope one of these days I get to meet you and I can sit down and really just lay it down on you. Doug Ford would like to privatize healthcare. If you in Canada, you know, we don't got private healthcare. We got public healthcare. But honestly, at the way we be taxed, it feels like I would rather pay for private healthcare and, you know, be taxed a lot less than pay for public healthcare and be taxed as much and then also have to wait 17 hours in a waiting room for a hospital. And then also even to see a family doctor, damn near impossible as well. So the issue, Canada's public healthcare system has the dubious distinction of having the worst wait times in any developed country. Healthcare costs have been increasing at a unsustainable rate, putting more and more financial pressure on the budgets of provincial government. The situation is likely to get worse with Canadian aging population. As we saw during the COVID pandemic, our healthcare system is too rigid and bureaucratized to quickly adapt to a crisis situation. Fact, Canada is among the OECD's countries that spend the most on healthcare. Ottawa's healthcare transfer to the provinces have more than doubled since 2006, from $20 billion to $49 billion in 2023. Damn. So in 2006, they had $20 billion. They had transferred $20 billion. In 2023 to 2024, there was $49 billion with nothing to show for it. They transferred in 2024, they transferred $49 billion to healthcare systems and nothing to show for it. The fundamental problem is that we are the only developed country where the government has a monopoly on medically required care. All other OECD countries, with the exception of the States, has universal mixed private-public systems that guarantee citizens equal access, which I will save my opinion, one second. Patients in these countries have a lot more choice than Canadians. They can be treated in public or private hospitals with the government or their private insurance paying for the treatment. While wait times are non-existent or very short, and nobody is denied because of low income. So this is the PPC's plan. It is time for Canada to implement reforms in the line in line with more efficient and cost and less costly mixed universal systems of other developed countries. Throwing more federal money at the problem, as all other parties are proposing, is not the right approach. On the contrary, it is part of the problem. Provincial government will never make the tough decision if they can always blame Ottawa for not sending enough money. We must end the current confusion over who does what and who's responsible for the problem. The People's Party, the PPC, will... Sorry, there's white stuff in my lips. Repeal the Canadian Healthcare Act and create the conditions for provincial and territorial governments to set up mixed and private public mixed private and public universal systems like other developed countries. They will be fully responsible for healthcare funding and management and fully accountable for the citizens as for the citizens' results, while Ottawa will respect the Constitution and stop meddling. Replace the Canadian healthcare transfer cash payments with the permanent transfer of tax points of equivalent value to the province and territories to give them sustainable sources of revenue. In practice, Ottawa will give up its good and service tax, GTS, and let provincial and territory governments occupy its fiscal room. In 2023 to 2024, the GST is expected to bring about $51 billion in revenues, almost the same amount currently transferred by Ottawa. Establish up, and the last their last point is to establish a temporary program to compensate poorer provinces whose revenue from the tax will be lower than the transfer payment they usually receive. I honestly think this might be a pretty good idea. So, their ideas, to really sum it up. The first one, repeal the Canadian Healthcare Act to create the conditions for provincial... The Canadian Health Act, adopted in 1984, is the federal legislation in Canada for publicly funded publicly funded health insurance, commonly called Medicare, and sets out the primary objective of Canadian healthcare policies. So, their rebuttal is to repeal that act and create the conditions for provinces and territories to set up mixed private and public universal systems. And then that those provinces and territories will be fully responsible for the healthcare funding and management. And how they will be funding by that is the repeal of, replace the Canadian healthcare transfer cash payments with the permanent transfer of tax points of the equivalent value. So since GST in every single province generates, well, I'll say specifically for like Ontario, would generate almost the same amount of money that Ottawa would be giving the province of Ontario, we can confidently just eliminate, what does it say? In practice, yeah, so Ottawa will give up its GST tax and let provincial government and territories occupy this fiscal room. I think this might work. Because if anybody knows how bad it is, I was talking with one of my friends about this a couple days ago, about how bad it is to be in those wait times. I would not mind if I have to pay, like I'm not saying everybody has the opportunity to have great insurance. And that's why I wasn't really so set on like privatized, because I'm like, I know not everybody has pretty good insurance, but I'm blessed by God. And from my mom's job, she has great insurance that covers me. I would not mind having my insurance cover me and have to pay a little bit more out of pocket if it means I can be in and out of that hospital in under an hour, in under 30 minutes, be seen, get a full annual, checkup, in-depth time, one-on-one care with my, or one-on-one time with my physician or doctor or whatever, and not feel like, you know, like I can only bring one problem at a time. I can't, you know, mention too many things. Like if you've been to any clinic, you'll know that they'll be like, you can only give one problem at a time. And I know a clinic is so much more different than a hospital, but it's like, I feel like even with the hospitals, they're like, if you come in with more than one issue, like, yeah, they're not going to turn you away, but they're going to tell you, okay, what's your most serious issue? They're going to deal with that. And then when it comes to the other issues, it's like, okay, we're going to throw you a Band-Aid, some ice, like here's antibiotics, like da 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 da, like just quick little Band-Aid fixes. When it's like, most times it's usually deeper. Like, I don't know. But yeah. And then the last one I wanted to discuss was their immigration. Now, I'm not an immigrant. My mom is an immigrant. She migrated here from South Sudan, Egypt specifically, and she was living in Toronto up until around the time I was born in 2003, and then moved here. So I'm never against no immigration, okay? Both my parents are actually immigrants, but yes. So the issue. The primary aim of Canada's immigration policy should be to economically benefit Canadians and Canada as a whole. It should not be used to forcibly change the culture, character, and social fabric of our country, and it should not put excessive financial burden on the shoulders of Canadians in pursuit of humanitarian goals. Despite Canada's already despite Canada already accepting more immigrants than any other country, both liberals and conservatives support an unsustainable increase in the annual immigration intake. And we are using mass immigration as a political tool to buy votes among immigration communities. I would also say we are using mass immigration to further push like a new workplace culture. Because I feel like this whole narrative of Canadians are lazy, like, has been pushed for a very long time. And especially seeing as how less productive we've been over the... I'm reading a book. Sorry, I'm reading a book right now, and it's called The Race with America. It's from a Canadian perspective, like, why Canada's falling behind in the race with America. And in the book, it was written in 2005 or 6, I believe, but it was saying that from that time, Canada has fallen behind in productivity with the States drastically. Like, since I think the 1950-somethings, we have been, or 1970-something, we've been falling behind the States on a steady decline. Like, we've, the gap has been widening. So I feel like to kind of push Canadians into like working better in harder conditions and really striving to actually work with mass immigration, now we look so productive. Like, I'm not, like, if you hear our job markets, there's no jobs, everybody wants a job, but there's no job because every Canadian wants to work. But it's like, no, this is not true. So, fact, in 2022, in addition to 437,000 immigrants or permanent residents, there was a net increase in the number of non-permanent residents, temporary foreign workers, foreign students, and refugees in Canada, estimated at 608,000 new immigrants. Both of these numbers represent the highest level on record. Commonly used arguments in support of higher immigration levels are flawed. Higher immigration is in itself cannot solve the labor shortages that affect some sectors of the economy. Immigrants are not just workers, but also consumers of goods, which creates demands for labors in other sectors and simply displaces the problem. This explains why we still have labor shortages, even though Canada has one of the highest levels of immigration in the world for several years. Moreover, only about one quarter of all newcomers to Canada every year are directly chosen because they have the right qualifications to work and fulfill economic needs. The rest, dependents, spouses and children of economic immigrants, or come through the family reunification program or as refugees. They either do not work or do not have the skills that are needed if they even find work. Mass immigration partly explains why wages and productivity have been stagnant in Canada, as cheaper immigration labor is often favored by employers over capital investment and automation. So, what is the PPC's plan? Sustainably lower the total number of immigrants and refugees Canada accepts every year from 500,000 planned by the Liberal government in 2025 to 100,000 to 150,000 in normal circumstances, or even lower in crisis circumstances, depending on Canada's economic situation and other circumstances. Another one of their plans is to reform the immigration point system and the related programs to accept larger portions of economic immigrants with the right skills. So bringing in Canadians who are going to benefit Canada's, like, what we need. So if we need construction workers, we're only going to, you know, accept immigrants who are construction workers. Sustainably lower the number of temporary foreign workers and make sure that they fulfill temporary positions and do not compete unfairly with Canadian workers. Change the law to make birth tourism illegal. So if you're born here touring, I guess, what even is birth tourism? But I'm sorry, that just made me laugh. Birth tourism is the practice of traveling to another country. Oh yeah. So yeah, basically with the purpose of giving birth to the person in that city so that they can get citizenship in that place. And then you can get citizenship later on. That's what birth tourism is. Increase resources for CSIS and the RCMP and the Canadian Immigration and Citizenship to do interviews and thorough background checks on all classes of immigrants. I think that's pretty good. Take Canada out of the UN's Global Impact for Migration. This is my thing. I feel like they should keep this, but say until 2035. Give us that like 5 to 10 year frameline to really rebuild Canada as a whole. But I don't think we should completely take ourselves out, because Canada genuinely is a great place maybe not a great place because, you know, we be cold and, you know, Tim's be on every block now, we got cannabis shops on every block, so I don't know if it's maybe the best, but it is a genuinely, if you are coming as a refugee or someone in need of humanitarian aid from, you know, your country, coming to Canada is your next best option in terms of coming to Canada, being safe, building yourself, getting that, and then going, you know, maybe to the States or something like that. Like, and I know that's what a lot of people end up doing, but I don't think we should completely remove ourselves from the UN's Global Compact for Migration. I just think for the next couple years. And then even when we do, you know, come back, we come back on some new terms. I do have an emergency actually to tend to right now. I'm so sorry. So we're going to have to cut this episode a little bit short. Guys, I love you to pieces. Even though if you haven't been listening to my, I think 3 episodes I've consistently done, I'm sorry, but I love you guys. And I'm so grateful to be having this opportunity to be able to do this radio show. It means the world to me. It's my baby. It's my prized possession. I love doing this. Sorry. It's just, I don't do well with farewells, but I know I'm going to be back. You guys will hear from me in the next coming semester. I hope you all are doing so well, and I hope you enjoy your summer off. If you're doing the spring semester, you got this, babe. You're going to kill it, crush it, eat it up. If you're not in school and you're just tuning in, hi, my name's Patricia. This was the last show. If you're interested, you can most definitely follow me on Instagram, on YouTube, on TikTok. They're all Patricia E. Lizzie, E-L-I-Z-Y. You can most definitely tap in there. I love you guys, and I hope you guys enjoy the rest of your days. I will see you in September, hopefully. Oh, actually, that's false, because later this month, all of us at Radio Laurier have a little something going on at something herb. I can't remember the name of the place, but after that, I will see you guys later in September. I hope you all have a great rest of your times. I love you to pieces. God bless you. Thank you so much for tuning in. Goodbye.